Well, thanks for tuning in. This is Matt Santos, and you are listening to The Mile High Show, episode 12 this week, where we sit down with Jim Sobo, a local Prescott area musician who has an interesting history from his days growing up in Southern Cal, in and around Hollywood, and playing music in some of the famed clubs, the Troubadour, the Whiskey a Go-Go, and all those famous places that you and I all know about. His move to the San Francisco Bay Area, and eventually ending up here in Prescott in northern Arizona. We're going to hear about his goal to and starting up the Howling Coyotes Tour, which is a singer-songwriter showcase for Prescott area and Yavapai County musicians. And this is year 10 for the Howling Coyote Tour. He'll be taking it on the road back to the San Francisco Bay Area this summer. We're going to hear a little bit about that and have some links to some of the musicians that he showcases on that tour on our website, milehighshow.com. We'll also have a link to the Raven Cafe, which is where we recorded this this interview. It's a great eatery, bar, art showcase, music showcase here in Prescott on Cortez Street, and it is a great spot to listen to local musicians and view local art by local artists. So we hope you get a chance to stop in at the Raven, and we thank them for being so kind to us while we took up space in their window. Sit back and enjoy, and I hope you enjoy my conversation with Jim Sobo. We're going to close out the show with a short clip from one of the musicians that we both discussed, that we're both fans of, and that is the great Chuck E. Wise, a staple in the Hollywood music scene, but he doesn't get a whole lot of recognition. I'm a big fan of Chuck E. Wise, and so is Jim, and we hope you may take a moment at the end to listen to a little bit of Chuck. And let's get on with it. This is my talk with Jim. Hope you enjoy. So tell me a little bit. I went through and over the last couple of days, and then when I was sitting here, I started pulling up some more of the old articles, some of the local ones, one from the Napa Register I was just reading. And reading about the history, we're talking, one of the main focuses of us sitting down today is for the Howling Coyote Tour. It's in its, this will be 10 years, correct?
Yes, yeah, this is our 10th anniversary.
Now, I had to sit down and watch the trailer for what was it, Mafioso, the father and
oh,
son.
Oh, yes, yeah.
I had to watch the trailer.
Yeah, that was a straight-to-DVD, as far as I know.
But
yeah,
there were some faces in there that you see in a lot of the, a lot of the mob movies and
yeah,
TV shows.
Yeah,
and
one of the main
some
characters.
And then just character actors that are on there,
right,
that are really recognizable.
Yeah.
We're going to get a little bit about what your interaction with that was.
Okay.
But let's go way back. What was childhood like for young Jim Sobo?
I was a little skate rat.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so there was a movie that came out called Dogtown.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of people are familiar with that. So that group, I was maybe about a grade or two behind that group.
Southern Cal?
Yeah.
Is where that was home
yeah,
base for you?
Marty Grimes, though, he went to my school. And so he was more my age group, which, again, probably about 2 years past Tony Hawk or Alvarez. Alva? Okay. So we were east of them. Those guys were down in Venice Beach, and they were like, you know, as it was portrayed, they had their own little gang going on. And we were east of them, so we were more like up in the Hollywood Hills.
Yeah.
But it was the same thing, you know, between the ages of 11, 12 to 16, 17, we would take the bus down and surf in the morning and then skate in the afternoon.
Now,
after.
Who's we? Yeah, brothers and sisters?
No,
or
me,
your cohorts in the neighborhood?
Yeah, me and the cohorts in the neighborhood. One of my dear friends that actually shot a lot of the footage that you're going through now.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ken Bundy. And just all the guys. He actually ended up moving from Hollywood, going to North Hollywood. And so I had like a group of friends from like the LA area that were like into punk, and then I had a group of friends in North Hollywood that were into like hard rock.
Yeah.
And I was like every man pretty much going from place to place. So but yeah, and then we'd look
slide
for
between both
slide
worlds.
Between both worlds. And so it was neat. Like I graduated in 83, so I was able to see like a lot of the really cool punk that was going on early on, like the Dead Kennedys and X. And went to some great punk shows.
Yeah.
And then
What were the clubs? Where were you hitting?
We went to like
then?
The Santa Monica Civic, used to put on some good punk shows. The Whiskey A Go Go, of course. That's where I saw
World
X.
Famous.
Yeah. Later years, I'll tell you, but you know, I played at the Roxy and at Johnny Depp's place the Viper Room, which is now I believe called something else.
Yeah.
But all those places, not the Troubadour. The Troubadour has always been a little bit more folk based.
Yeah.
But we played there too. And
that's mid late 80s.
Yeah, mid 80s.
Now who
early 80s actually.
Who was the at the Viper? Chucky Wise, was he running around there?
How did you know that?
Oh man, I'm a big Tom Waits fan.
Oh my God,
I love listening to Tom Waits.
Yeah.
Through Tom Waits and just reading about and his music and his time with Ricky Lee Jones.
Yeah,
that name started popping in. So I did a little, and I've got a couple of his CDs.
I have been to Chucky Wise shows at the Viper Room.
He was like the house band or
he
the part
was
owner
more
or
less,
something?
Yeah, pretty much the house band, but really funky, cool stuff. Like he, if you were to look at it and try to dissect his music, it would go from blues to soul to New Orleans vibe to funk. And he was a minimal
very
mover. He almost had like a Bill Cosby dance move going on. It was very, very minimal, but that voice, and it was, you know, pretty much spoken word.
Yeah.
You know, if you think about it, in the 70s in L.A., you had a lot of great singer-songwriters like Tom Waits that were doing pretty much their own thing, and that's what Chucky Wise was doing there.
He definitely has his own thing going.
I respect you immensely for even knowing who Chucky Wise is. Very few people know who he is, and very few people actually own any of his recordings. I believe he only has a couple of them out
there. Got two CDs, and then there's one that that you can hear some tracks online, and it's one of those that like never got. It was very limited release,
like a bootleg of a bootleg.
Yeah, almost
or
like a what do they call that? An urban legend. If it was even out
was.
There, you know,
he absolutely was. Yeah.
Once he's got a couple of, my son actually, my 5-year old, when I play one, I got to kind of watch it because some of the language I don't want him to repeat it. It's on the tip of my tongue now, but
You can't not smile when you say the word Chucky Wise.
It's one specific. I'm going to have to pull it up. I haven't listened to it in a little bit, but my son loves the little intro to it, and he'll sing along with it. And when it gets to a certain point, I go, okay, well, we'll pause that track.
Yeah, he has one called, I think, Crazy Jesus or something like that.
That's the one.
You're right. And
exactly.
And that was his thing, too. It was just a jam, kind
Sneaky
of.
Sneaky Jesus.
Yeah, Stinky Jesus, actually.
Like, and he's got one about Jolson, Al Jolson.
Yeah, right.
It's like, I got to pull those CDs out again. I got to have
to when he puts on his blackface during his honeymoon or something, right? And freaks his fiance out.
Yeah. Yeah, he's anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, so
anyway,
so
there's a million stories there.
the connection between your childhood and the skate culture and the what would you call it, a skate rat, and music was really paralleled.
I mean,
they ran concurrent. So when did you start playing?
Probably by the time I was 15 or 16.
Yeah. Guitar was your first?
Yeah, always the guitar, pretty much only the acoustic. In fact, I've never really touched an electric.
Really?
Yeah. Just because there's so much great talent in that area that I'm kind of more of a, a producer, promoter, seeing talent. That's kind of always been my thing. Like, I would never step on someone else's shoes if I thought that they could do something better than I could.
Now, that whiskey scene and the punk scene of the early 80s, I graduated 84 from the San Francisco Bay Area.
Graduated 83.
And I saw some great music from the Southland coming up, and then also some homegrown Bay Area music at Keystone Palo Alto, the Mabuhay on Broadway in San Francisco. Different spots around the Bay that I was hitting around that same time.
Both musically rich communities.
But acoustic wasn't in the forefront at that time.
Not when I was growing up.
So
but
who were your influences? Why'd you decide go acoustic?
You go 10 years earlier, that's exactly what was going on in L.A. It was Jackson Browne.
Yeah.
It was Little Feat. It was the Eagles.
Yeah.
It was, Van Morrison, James Taylor, Paul Simon.
Were those the guys you were listening
to? Yeah, yeah. Anyone, like, my criteria was if you can play your own instrument, write your own songs, and perform your own songs, then you were good by me.
The days before auto-tune.
Right, exactly, right.
Like, now, did you were any other siblings? Did you have older
yeah,
brothers?
I was kind of a mistake. Yeah, my dad was a World War II hero. He was born in 1919. He fought with Patton. Liberated concentration camps in Poland and Germany at the end of the war. And by the time that he married my mom, he had a son, and my mom had two daughters, and they pretty much were told that he wasn't going to be having any more children.
Yeah.
And then I snuck in at the, actually, that should have been my name was Oops, actually.
Now, were the your step-siblings, were they in the house when you were growing up? Or
yes.
Were they already?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And they're like, all my half-brothers and sisters. They're the only brothers and sisters I've ever known.
Now, so
I've never referred to them anything other than that. And they were...
They're your siblings.
Right. They're my siblings. And my sisters were already in the 60s scenes.
Yeah.
And they've got stories.
So was that kind of... Did you get your musical influence from them?
Yeah. A lot of Beatles. I used to listen to a lot of their LPs, mostly. You know, and Elton... And plus, I had one of my best friends I grew up with played the piano. And he was playing a lot of Elton John and Billy Joel.
I just saw the other night I was editing some stuff at the house, some photos, and I'll have a computer going, working on, and then another one watching, Netflix or something. And I saw a really neat documentary on Paul Williams, who was just enormous in the 70s, enormous for a little guy. And
famous for the Muppets movie song.
And his rehab.
Rainbow
that
Connection.
That was the whole gist of the movie was about his rehab. He's been clean and sober like 15, 16 years or
right.
so. But I was just surprised. Every time they would play a clip of one of his old songs, I forgot he did that. He had hundreds of hits.
Such a great songwriter.
And it was the same kind of thing, that piano and acoustic and ballads and things that he was
Yeah, you
doing.
Had Leon Russell playing that kind of a vibe also with the Paul Williams thing. And
it was a fascinating movie.
Bird and Bacharach.
You kind of forget, it's in my head, that 70s music scene with the influx of disco and stuff, it was... you kind of forget about some of the hits and some of the songwriters that were around then.
Yeah, and they were kind of they laid out the they were the architects, of that singer songwriter thing.
So you're cruising up and down Hollywood, listening to music, starting to play a little, getting in the clubs.
Right.
What were some of your first gigs? And who were you playing with? Who was it?
I didn't actually start. I didn't start playing until I moved to San Francisco.
What brought you up north?
I graduated high school, and LA to me always seemed so insulated. You know, I just felt like I wasn't in a real world, you know. Yeah. You know, because I
Hollywood
my
land.
Yeah, Hollywood land. My folks were from Minneapolis, and I had visited there often when I was growing up, and I really loved like the Midwest and the salt of the earth kind of folks, and I didn't feel like I had that in my childhood.
When you were, you know, riding your board and hanging out at Venice, was that kind of a way to try and fit in, you think, or?
No, I really enjoyed doing all that. Yeah, I loved doing all that. I wasn't as good as all the guys you see
but
in Dogtown and stuff like that.
Midwestern boy at heart?
Yeah, though? I think so. Yeah, I think as far as my ethics are concerned, you know, there's a lot of folks there that obviously are a little vapid and a little...
plastique.
Yeah, exactly. And so I just, you know, I always felt like I didn't fit in a lot, you know. And San Francisco was the closest city, you know, because L.A. didn't feel like a city to me. It felt like just a big mesh of suburbs and strip malls. And there was no, like, you know, epicenter or downtown area necessarily like the Bay Area has. When you go into San Francisco, you can feel
Oakland,
it.
Oakland, Berkeley had that. I grew up in the East Bay, Oakland suburb, which was that sprawling, every town just bled into the other.
Right, exactly.
What you were getting away from is what I grew up in, but it was a 20-minute across the bridge to get downtown.
And you're in. And you're in your Fillmore East and Fillmore West, actually. Yeah. And it's just... It was what I'd wanted. It was what I had visited, and I just knew that that was my town. Plus, I've never really been into driving that much, and I really appreciated the public transportation. Yeah.
With BART and Muni.
Yeah. It's fantastic. I just, you know.
How old were you when you went up to the city?
I was probably at that point in my late 20s, and I moved there with, at that time... my wife and we lived in along the Fillmore district, like Pacific Heights area, and that was when you could afford to live there.
Beautiful spot of town.
You know, it was only $700 a month then for a one bedroom.
Couldn't rent a garage.
Right,
there for
exactly.
That now.
Seriously, a half of a garage.
Split it with six migrant workers.
Seriously. And it was great. And then I had a band. The band was called Plain and Simple. Yeah. And that's exactly what it was. It was me, a stand-up bass. I played the acoustic. And then a guy on congas who was actually also a clown with Barnum and Bailey.
Man.
And then I had a drunken harmonica player.
I think I know him.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Aren't
they all? This was probably, again, like late 80s, early 90s. And so I was there for about a good 5 years or so.
Where were you guys playing? What were some of the...
We used to play at the Plow and Stars, not to be confused with the Starry Plow.
That doesn't ring a bell.
Which
that?
The Starry Plow is in Berkeley, and the Plow and Stars is in San Francisco on Clement Street. We used to play at little places like in the Haight area that probably have changed names several times over since then.
There was a couple places I used to go to really regular, the Grant and Green,
right.
And the Saloon, right? Those were North Beach, kind of touristy blues kind of places.
Right, like Irish bars.
Yeah, I used to have a couple of Pat O'Shea's way down.
Right.
Down towards the ocean, we used to go there a lot. I think that was like way out on Geary.
Yeah, we probably
or
paid at like one of the places in Fisherman's Wharf, you know.
Did you ever, did you know a band, what was his name? There was a Lucky Strike band. They were like a R&B blues band.
Yeah.
I used to hang out with those guys quite a bit.
Oh, wow.
Jim Mylan? Oh, God, I can't remember. When you said drunken harmonica player, that reminded me of Rich Mylan.
Oh, wow.
Was the singer for them. They were a little bar band. They used to play in the East Bay and stuff. But went to a party with Rich one night on a Tuesday, and we wrapped up sometime Sunday afternoon. That was like
that's about the time period. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
when we were young and doing our best to raise hell.
I'm still paying for a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
Physically and emotionally and mentally. But yeah, I used to hang out there. Trivoli. Cafe Trivoli was on, I think, Columbus.
Right.
There was a bunch of little hole in the walls.
Yeah.
You'd park at one end of town and take a cab or walk through the rest.
Yeah. I mean, what people don't realize is that you can go, down Columbus and you hit Chinatown and then you immediately hit North Beach and then you immediately hit Fisherman's Wharf.
Yeah.
And it's all in one stride.
Yeah.
And it's still like that,
Yeah, we had a lot of blackout nights that I don't remember.
Right.
Up and down San Francisco.
Yeah, because it's so tight.
Yeah.
Especially in that area, you just walk all over the place. You're close to the water, you're close to the bay, you're close to both of the bridges, really. And,
yeah. That was a fun time being in the Bay Area.
I'll bet.
Yeah.
Yeah, anytime's a fun time to be in the Bay Area.
I will go back to visit now, and I can't wait to get back home, man.
Yeah,
I've been out here 10 years.
Yeah, you've been gentrified, probably.
I love it.
I love
it out here. It's slower pace.
The Wild West, right?
I see these things up in the sky when I look up. I forget what they're called. Stars.
Right.
You don't see those there.
Yeah.
Too many city lights.
The good thing about the Bay Area, though, is you go, south or north or east, and you can see stuff like that.
Get out into the valley.
Right. Yeah. Or just, go...
Lodi.
Like a lot of the Highland Coyote Tour spends a lot of time in that North Bay area.
Well, we'll get there. You and your wife living up in San Francisco,
right?
Where is this in relation to you guys coming out to Arizona? Did you end up back in L.A.?
Oh yeah, I ended up back in L.A. My dad was ill, and so I broke up. We broke up, and I ended up taking a gig in Copenhagen for a winter.
Oh, wow.
With that same gentleman that played piano with me when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And he had a band in Copenhagen, and apparently during the winter they book a lot of American acts there because they're so far north in Europe that it's very long summers and very long summer days and very long winters and very long winter nights, kind of, not a lot of daylight during the winter, so a lot of people spend time indoors listening to music.
Yeah.
And the Americans have always been really successful in Europe, whether it's blues or jazz and stuff like that.
It seemed, especially like the jazz scene way back when, had a lot more respect, at least
for the
from
jazz
the outsider
players,
looking in. I didn't live through it, but it seemed
especially
like...
Especially the American black jazz players, and blues players, really.
So you were playing to the European audience?
Yeah.
Was there a lot of expats that you played to, or it was mainly...
No, pretty much, mostly Danish and Swedes and Germans. So that lasted 3 months. And then I went home and then wanted to stay close to home.
Back to L.A.
Okay. And wanted to stay close to home because my dad was getting old and getting ill. And then dad passed away. Mom had already been diagnosed with Alzheimer's at that point. And I had gotten eventually... that's when I probably had the best band I ever had was a band called... our first name was Common Ground.
Yeah, I saw that notation.
And then it ended up... Our name had to be changed because there was another Common Ground that was more successful than we were. And we changed our name to Edgar... And there was nobody in the band named Edgar. That's why, basically.
It
was just fun and games, And exceptional band. Very much along the lines of Dave Matthews, big sound, really funky, really cool, good songwriting, good instrumentation, very jam band sounding. And
this is through the 90s now?
Yeah, now we're in, talking about, the AAA format, which is like when it first came out, they were marrying people like Dave Matthews and Sheryl Crow with people like James Taylor and Carole King. Adult album alternative.
Okay.
And
long form, FM music.
Right. And so it was great. One moment you'd hear Steely Dan, and the next moment you'd hear Dave Matthews or something like that.
For any listeners might not know, FM is a radio band. It's where you used to listen to music not digitally, not through. It used to come free over the airwaves.
Yeah. And it actually was really creative, not owned by one company that
used
you
to
know,
be played on those really big black CDs. They call them LPs.
Right. That's what they right. And prior to that, 45s.
Yeah, reel
right.
to reel.
Right. Reel to reel.
So you're playing.
I had a great band there, and I was probably there for another additional 5 years. Yeah. Just helping mom and helping the family, and eventually got remarried. And then I moved that. I just had a daughter. I took my mom and my daughter and my wife at that time, who you know now, right? And we moved to Prescott because her mom lived here, and because Arizona had Arizona long-term care for my mom, and California didn't really have that.
We sat and talked with your ex, Cynthia, local instructor, teacher, and we'll get into that because you spent some time in the classroom, leading the classroom as well. But Cynthia is also a comic here. And now, did you guys meet through the movie studio system? Or
No, we waited tables together. And she was a pretty well-known comic at that time. Yeah. She actually wrote for Paramount, and she wrote for NBC. She was on a sitcom as a writer with NBC. And I had that band at that time, so we were both kind of on our games and respected each other.
In the entertainment biz.
Yeah,
both
in the entertainment biz, yeah. And then I had a guy from Sony come out on a night that I was... What I do is I try out new music at a little place called Anastasia's Asylum, which is was in Santa Monica. And I used to go there to try out my new songs before I would introduce those songs to the band.
Now, were you doing this solo?
Yeah, solo, acoustic, just trying to work them out. And there was a guy from Sony there that night that saw me and liked that. And then I ended up, he said, give me what you have. And I gave him my band stuff and didn't like that. But somehow that ended up being what was on that Mafioso soundtrack.
What was your title? Hello?
Yeah.
I got that right? I wasn't sure if I got correct info. What was the genesis of that specific song?
I started getting interest in just me as a singer-songwriter acoustically, and I guess for me it took me maturing to be able to settle down and not feel like I had to have a band around me to be successful.
Now, your writing style and the music that you were creating, your original stuff, was it autobiographical?
Yeah, mostly.
Stories? What was some of the things?
Yeah, I'd say some people are really good about coming up with stories and fantasizing, you know, like Chuck E. Weiss and stuff like that. And most of my stuff is either how I would like to see the world to be, or my own, you know, pulling from my own experiences.
Now, how did Hello go? What was the story?
Hello
was
basically someone getting up onto a mic and introducing themselves as a songwriter that you've never heard before. So if you were to hear it, like in the days of a 45. That this is, you're being introduced to a new singer-songwriter, and this is a guy that's trying to basically make an introduction to you musically, from a fan base to a singer-songwriter.
This might be too broad of a question, but the feeling of when you're playing with a band and you got 3, 4, 5 guys behind you, to you, your guitar and a mic, and that's it. How does that change the way you approach the audience? Were you the front man of the band, Common Ground?
I was a singer and one of the main writers.
Okay, strip away the band. You're not the front man. You're the man standing in front of a mic. How do you have to gear yourself up differently mentally before you take the stage?
Well, to me, being those were the people that I was most influenced by, to me, that was the real deal. Like, to me, it was like, if you could pull that off, then you're the real deal. And that's what I've always strived for, even to this day. Performing is that I really just try to suck blood from a rock and just, you know, pour my heart and soul out there just individually and show people that I've got the skills on the guitar and the timing and the finger work and the phrasing and the tone and being on pitch and, you know, all of those things. It's a craft, you know, and so that's what I was doing back then. But
there's
back then,
nothing to hide behind.
Right.
Yeah.
So you really are just kind of naked. But those are the guys that I wanted to see. Those are the shows that always really inspired me when I could be, like, in second row. You
and
know,
who? Like, give me...
Like, you know, watching a James Taylor or a Paul Simon or a Cat Stevens or any of those guys. You know, these days we would relate that to, like, a Martin Sexton or a, you know... Ray LaFontaine, you know.
I was listening to a show, a podcast that I listened to. It's Jimmy Pardo's podcast, Never Not Funny. It's one that I really like. And he gets off on these tangents with musicians. And he went and saw Cat Stevens not that long back, a few years back. And he was talking, and I started thinking, while I'm listening to this, I start thinking, I know a couple of the songs. So I had to go home and Google and start listening to some YouTube clips. And I tell you, since now being a father, listening to that music and having images of my little five-year-old son running through my head, I was bawling like a baby. I couldn't believe how... And now when I heard these when I was a younger guy, it was like, kind of, you know, right. Didn't make an impact.
Right.
But some of his lyrics and his phrasings just... really powerful stuff. I'm going to have to go back and revisit some of the stuff that I let go in one ear and out the other 20 years ago.
Right. Yeah, and that's the thing is that it's so powerful when it's done in when it's framed like that. And when you can, you know, believe me, I strive to write good songs and I strive to listen to good music. You know, people that actually put some thought into their lyrics and their chord progressions and writing a good bridge, not just the verse, chorus kind of a thing. You
dissect it down to its elements.
Right. And so for them, that's what they did. That's what, again, they were... the architects that we have are trying to strive towards, you know.
Fascinating.
Yeah. And that actually was the beginning of the Helen Coyote tour, too. Because,
we'll get there.
All right.
Now you're in Prescott. The family's here. Did you start teaching when you first got out here? Or
more or less, I started teaching in L.A. before I moved out. I was a vocational educator. And then, when I moved here... it was a matter of what's called reciprocity, getting your teaching certification transferred over to a different state.
Recognized by the boards here.
Right, and then taking the AEPA, which is the Arizona Educational Proficiency Exam. And so there was a period of time when I had to do other jobs until I was able to, you know, get everything transferred over.
Now, were you teaching music or?
No, I was teaching. Teaching culinary arts. Yeah.
How'd that transpire? Where did that fall in the mix?
Because a musician has got to have a avocation. What do you think? You got to pay the bills. You know, so
and there was no class in waiting tables.
waiting tables. I didn't do it for that long. I tried to get back of the house, and I was a sous chef. Actually, I got fired from Spago's Wolfgang Puck's first place, because I didn't have my own knife set, and I tried to explain to them that the reason why I got the job is so I could earn the money to have my own knife set.
Won't hire you without experience. You can't get experience without being hired.
Exactly. Yeah. I worked with some great chefs and I learned a lot and eventually did corporate catering. I actually was hired by the firm that did the O.J. Simpson trial.
Oh, wow.
And did all the catering for the O.J. Simpson trial.
Any insight?
I saw them all. Effie Bailey, Johnny Cochran, all of them.
You got to drop at least a story here.
Oh, they just, the egos that are larger than the Twin Towers.
Now, the Kardashians were in that mix, right?
They probably were there somewhere.
The dad was one of, he was on one of those teams.
Yeah, probably.
Before they became the worldwide celebrities they are today.
Robert Shapiro was the one that was in the firm that had hired me and... So yeah, I had a good little run. And then I decided...
Let's compare. Wait, I don't want you to get off this too fast. Compare the legal egos to the show business egos. Who's worse?
Well, that was L.A., though, you know?
Just the L.A. ego?
Yeah, the L.A. ego,
regardless of the industry?
Yeah. And that's why I escaped to the Bay Area.
Escaped. I like that.
Because it's all what's called a... borderline personality disorders, yeah. You know, it comes all, it's circular. Everything comes back to me, you know?
So what are some comparisons between the culinary arts and the musical arts? I mean, they're both very creative tools, very creative fields. Were you able to meld some of those together, or were you keeping the music separate from the kitchen?
Well, yeah, I love cooking. I love playing music. And two very, very different skill sets.
Yeah.
They're still part of the artistic intelligence.
Yeah.
You know, now that I understand different intelligences as a former educator, you've got the kinesthetic, where people like to work with their hands. You've got the analytical, the people that are good with numbers or sciences. And then you've got the artistic. And so it was transferable for me.
Yeah.
It was creative, but... Yeah, I mean, anybody that's ever worked in a kitchen, we can all tell you that, you know, it's a lot of hard work.
I'm sure I'm butchering it, but I can't even remember who said it, but I remember somebody comparing a chef, the head chef, to like an orchestra leader, you know, the conductor in an orchestra, and the way everything has to meld together for it to work.
Right.
Obviously much more so in a Spago's or something like that, as opposed to a diner, but it's still the same thing, making things work together and the coordination with the wait staff and then the audience, the customer who's going to eat the meal. It's kind of the same. And
yeah, a lot more business that's involved in culinary arts that's involved in music. But, you know, saying that, the music business, at the time that I was coming into it, was really kind of in a revolution, because the internet was starting to pop up and people were starting to create their own music and sell their own music.
Yeah.
Through iTunes or through CDBaby.com.
You didn't need a big record company behind you to put out a product.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that was really empowering. You know, I mean, I was able to record my own music, produce my own music, perform my own music, sell my own music.
That's a whole different take, because the industry itself and those that were making money, even the artists that were making money, or I guess they were making money for the big business... That was almost a hit to them. It was like, oh no, now they don't need us anymore. So as an audience, we hear how that was the downfall of music, but you're saying for the artists themselves, the singer, the songwriter, this was a real liberating aspect.
Absolutely, yeah. If you talk to guys like Billy Joel, who basically all of his songs and a lot of the very famous singer-songwriters from that time, all of their songs were owned by those labels. Yeah. And he actually, only years later, was able to create his own income just through performance, really.
Wow.
I mean, all those great albums that you hear, you know, people like that didn't own the publishing.
Yeah.
And it's just the most heartbreaking thing you could ever imagine, that you don't have... Like, John Fogerty's story was probably one of the most successful stories about him going back to court.
And playing in the courtroom.
And, saying, this is my song, and able to actually regain his own publishing rights, you know?
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
So now, when you were teaching the culinary arts, was it at a high school here?
I was teaching... At Bradshaw Mountain, and I taught an Ash Fork.
Wow.
Yeah, and which was really interesting.
Ash Fork is a world unto itself.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
When we first moved out here, I moved to a suburb of Ash Fork. I was in Paulden. So.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, you don't ever want to invade Ash Fork. They're very well armed.
Yes. It's a very interesting...
They all have 40 acres, and in fact, I don't even know how a sheriff goes on to any of those properties.
There have been some bad things happening to sheriffs up there in recent years.
I'll bet.
But that little... When we go up to the 40, you know, whether we're going to Flag or whatever, I like to pull off and drive through Ash Fork and Seligman, that little section, the old downtown, if you want to call it a downtown. But there's some neat old storefronts and things right there off the highway.
Yeah, that used to be Route 66.
Route 66, exactly.
So it's really interesting. In fact, if you ever saw the animated feature Cars, that's that story, basically.
And that on the DVD, now, I got this movie long before I had a son, so it's my guilty pleasure is I love cartoons.
Me too.
But the documentary attached to that DVD, they interview, and I'm going to get his name, Angel something or other. Him and his wife own that barbershop in Seligman with a lot of the memorabilia, the old stuff.
Really?
The souvenirs from Route 66 back in its heyday.
Right.
His barbershop's full of that stuff, and they interviewed him on that documentary. He's still up there. Angel's still up there. And they show the exterior and some of the exteriors of the main strip in Seligman. It's a neat,
haunting. It really is haunting.
A lot of character, a lot of songs, a lot of good music written about that time of trans, you know, cross-country driving through these little towns and things.
Yeah, because it wasn't about the destination then. It was about the journey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you are now in Prescott. You're teaching kids how to cook and prepare fine meals and still playing downtown?
Well, when I first came here, I really had thought I was leaving that all behind to raise a child and to take care of my mom. And then I started going downtown, and I started listening to a lot of the musicians that ended up going on the tour, and I was inspired again.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, well.
Downtown being Prescott's Courthouse Square, Whiskey Row.
Yeah, mostly actually formerly Coyote Joe's.
Yes, which is a place where I've been in, and anybody listening to this show, if there's anybody, I don't even know if there's anybody listening to this thing, but Brick and Bones is the name of the venue now, but it was Coyote Joe's for many years.
It's one of the few venues that actually allowed original singer-songwriters to play.
What was mostly going up and down the row? Bars, cover
music,
bands,
yeah.
Blues, country,
yeah,
western.
Right.
So Coyote Joe's has an opportunity for you to hear like-minded musicians.
Right.
Who were some of the guys you were listening to, guys and artists that you were listening to?
A lot of the guys that ended up going on those first few tours, Jonathan Hust, who is probably, in my opinion, whether it's here in Prescott or nationwide or internationally, probably one of the better contemporary pianist, guitar, singer-songwriters, very reminiscent of, you know, he's going to hate me saying this, but Randy Newman.
Yeah.
But just, he's just haunting, really. He's an old soul, and when I caught him in his early 20s, and he already sounded like he had been at it for a long time.
Randy Newman has some fantastic music, a great, unique sound. Unfortunately, a lot of people know him strictly for, I hate to call it that, but like novelty kind of songs.
For Disney.
Yeah, but I've got a box set of his that's just stuff I'd never heard of.
Oh, yeah, he's very blatant in his lyrics. He's fearless, actually.
Again, some of the things I don't think are ready for my son to listen
to. Right, probably not, no.
But some great stuff.
Yeah, like Rednecks, that's not a good song.
So you're coming down to Kojo's, you're listening to some of these musicians. What motivated you to pick up your guitar again, guitar and pen and paper?
Those artists, you know, I was like, wow, you know, there's actually something going on here. I didn't really think there'd be anything going on in Prescott, Arizona. You know, Prescott like biscuit.
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't even fathom that there'd be something going on.
When did you first go up and play in front of an audience again?
Probably about a year after I moved here.
Do you remember do you remember that instance? Does anything stick in your mind as far as?
Yeah, I had all the songs that I had sung with acoustically that I had started to work on at about the time that I placed that song in Mafioso, so I was like, you know, wow, yeah, this is a great opportunity for me to express myself again as an artist and feel whole again, because really, honestly, you know, we all make sacrifices, but we all have certain parts of us that will always live on within us, whether we try to do the responsible thing or not, you know. So, and then I was actually so inspired. I, you know, listened to Kenny James and, and Dave Whitley and Gary Ukra, who is out of Minneapolis. And
I was watching. He's on one of the clips from AZTV that's on that hard drive you gave me and also on YouTube. It was from, I think, that morning show with Lou Reese. Mm-hmm. And he played in that. You were being interviewed, and then they cut to him playing.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest, I that name was not familiar to me.
Yeah.
And when I saw that clip, I was blown away.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
Was some
and that's,
great music.
That's an original song of yeah. his. And that's what... That,
I'll put links to that up when we post this so people can get in there and listen.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, so immediately I felt like I wanted the rest of the world to see and hear what I heard, and the rest of the world to me was San Francisco. So
yeah. So that was the genesis of the Howling Coyote story.
Yeah.
Where's the name come from?
From Coyote Joe's.
Coyote Joe's.
And the singers were Howling Coyotes.
And what is the criteria for the Howling Coyote tour? That's original music.
Original
give
music.
Give me your what was going through your mind as you start formulating this and getting that idea generating and those juices flowing. What did you want the world, the Bay Area, to hear?
I wanted to be a fly in the wall for a show that I wanted to see. And the kind of shows that I want to see are showcases where you get to see yeah. a bunch of different people in one show. It's stimulating. It's invigorating. All the artists maybe come back on stage together at the end of the show, yeah. and it's just like you're always
jam
session. It's just you're always engaged.
Yeah.
Like, and so instead of seeing one band or one artist, you're seeing a series of new people to you that are these new singer-songwriters. And to
yeah.
me, you know, satellite radio was also coming up about that time,
yeah.
and that's what I would always fish for new artists that I would be inspired by.
So how did you approach these artists to join you on this? Were they all anxious right away? Did you have any pushback from folks that maybe didn't know if this was going to be a good idea?
Well, you know, Prescott isn't the biggest town or yeah. city in the world. So when you start talking about taking people into a place like San Francisco, what people don't realize about the Bay Area is, it goes north, south, and
yeah.
east. And so you can go to the North Bay, the South Bay, the East Bay.
The wine country.
And the wine country,
yeah.
right. And just it goes on and on and on and on. And I, knowing from living there, it's one of probably the most supportive musical communities that I had ever
Very
been.
Eclectic, too.
It's yeah, and
all
absolutely.
Different styles.
And there's no ego to it. You know, even the business side of it there was exactly the opposite of what Los Angeles
yeah.
has. It wasn't about, you know, the bottom line and about numbers. It was more about artistic expression. And about, you know, supporting local artists, really.
Now, talk a little bit about the business side of it, because an undertaking like this isn't cheap. You were going for a couple of months. Was that what the plan through the summer, or was it a few
no,
weeks?
No, it's usually about a 10-day venture.
10-day,
yeah.
So 2 weeks.
Yeah, you go from a Friday
cheap.
To a Sunday.
How did you fund that first, 2005,
well,
was that...
It's the gift of gab, you know. You got to get on and start talking with some venues in the Bay Area and just sell them on the fact that you're bringing this original singer-songwriter
yeah.
talent from the Southwest.
Now, were you able to tap into some of your contacts from before?
Was yes, to a certain extent, yeah.
yeah. There were still some that,
there
that
were, yeah.
were around?
Yeah, I was mostly microbreweries. Lagunitas was the first place that we ever... played, and in fact I played there only because I went on a microbrew tour the year prior, and I played there on a whim. They had a stage,
yeah,
and I ended up, you know, making some contacts, and then from there it was all networking. It was like, well, tell me about some other microbreweries that might be into this. And it seemed at that time that microbreweries were into the acoustic singer songwriter
yeah.
thing, that it wasn't about bands, because people were just kind of chilling and people were listening too,
yeah.
and that's so important with this kind of a concept.
Did you see a connection between the musical craft of singer-songwriter and the craft brewing?
I did, kind of,
yeah.
yeah. Yeah, and at that time, that's when really when, like, especially in the Northwest, craft brewing was blowing up. That was the, you know, I mean, if you think about it, Sierra Nevada, Anchor Steam, you know, some of the pioneers of microbrew.
Yeah.
And then you just go north from there.
Did you think that because they appreciated the nuances and the depth of a microbrewery, they kind of appreciated the same effort that went into music?
Absolutely. I absolutely believe that. I think that they consider themselves artists or artisans.
Yeah.
And I think that that definitely one bleeds right into the other. I mean, I'm a little jaded. I'm not jaded, but I'm a little prejudiced because I happen to really be a big fan of microbrews. But
well, and that brings up, and I failed to mention where we are. We're at the Raven Cafe in Prescott, Cortez Street, right off a block off of the Courthouse Square. But they're famous here for just that. They've got a lot of different things on tap, some artisanal coffees. They display local and, well, regional artists on the walls, photographers, painters, sculptors, all kinds of different things. They're catering to you.
Absolutely.
They're catering to the Jim Sobos of the community and of the world.
Absolutely,
really.
Yeah. And that's why I, you know, places like this have probably done really well with transplants like myself.
Yeah.
Although I'm sure there's a lot of folks locally that don't appreciate us transplants, but
you've been here
nonetheless.
You're a native now.
Right, Yeah, it's been 12, 13 years now, yeah. So, yes, and then we just lined it up. We went from San Francisco, establishments like Beach Chalet, which is a microbrewery in Golden Gate Park, at the very west end of Golden Gate Park, to Lagunitas in Petaluma, to the Russian River Brewery in Santa Rosa, to Downtown Joe's in Napa, to Hop Monks, and
the,
it just goes on and on and on and on.
The article I was reading was previewing your Downtown Joe's show
on
the Napa Register.
Napa, right.
How far north did you go?
That was about it. Santa Rosa,
I had family for a while up about even with Fort Bragg, but east, up the 101, past Willits. There was some neat little spots up farther up.
Oh, yeah. You talk about Sebastopol.
Mendocino. Yeah.
You talk about Sonoma.
Yeah.
And really the North Bay, when and if I do move back after my daughter graduates high school to continue the Howling Coyote Tour on a full-time basis year-round, the North Bay will probably be my hub.
Huh?
Yeah, there's a great station, KRSH, which is a commercial station, not a college station, which I've had a lot of success with. And they support, still to this day, it's one of the few commercial radio stations that support local artists. It's fantastic. It's like, come on, you're like, where do you see that anymore? You know, maybe...
You don't get that on Clear Channel?
No. I don't think so. Not last time I checked.
So public radio and community radio.
Yeah.
And then what was the station again you mentioned?
KRSH.
KRSH.
The Crush. Yeah.
The Crush.
The Crush. And you get people like Bonnie Raitt that would blow through town and play on there. And then you also get like local artists.
Yeah. The guy playing the coffee shops and the microbreweries.
Exactly.
Interesting.
And so, it's great stuff. And so, we just started networking, talking to radio stations, talking to local publications like the Napa Register. And
we've got a good example of local art being put on the window right now. Moving Edge, improvisational music, improvisational dance at the Raven March 6th through the 8th.
With Jonathan Best, also one of the great
piano
players.
Is this Jonathan behind you?
No, this is not Jonathan.
This is...
Oh, it is Jonathan.
This is
Jonathan. How are you? Interview.
We're gonna, if you don't mind, Jim...
No, please.
Let's let Jonathan grab a mic here real quick.
Okay. What do you want to talk about?
No, tell me what you're putting up there.
Okay.
You got to eat this mic. It's
a
Jimbo.
This is an improvisational group where we just create the music on the spot. No discussion about keys or anything. We just listen to each other and feel it.
That's kind of how I do my podcast. There's no discussion of what it is, and it's all made up on the spot, including all the facts that I present. They're facts that I just made up.
Yeah, that is exactly...
I'm Matt Santos,
hey, Matt,
by the way. Jonathan? Now, you local? You're from Prescott here?
Yeah, yeah.
Are you going to be dancing?
I'm going to be playing and dancing. It's all the same to me.
Yeah, it's piano player.
It's exactly, I'm totally with you on this.
Tell us why the Raven? Why do you perform here?
Because they hire us.
But the atmosphere here, we were just talking about that a minute ago with Jim, about the atmosphere here at the Raven is very open to local artists, local musicians, all the way down to their local beers and their things.
And they'll have teenagers come in and perform from the High Point, North Point.
The North Point Academy, yeah.
Yeah.
So what can folks expect on Friday, March 6th, between 8 and 11 p.m.?
Lots of inspiring music to dance to.
When I dance, nobody is inspired. I will confess you that right now.
I'll bet you I'll be inspired.
No, you may be inspired to hit that bar a little heavier than you normally would. But other than that, that's my wife, when I dance, is inspired to go to another nightclub. That's what it says. And then inspired to change her name and move. And
whoa, that sounds intense. But dancing... What you do is dancing.
No, yeah.
You're dancing with the microphone.
That's a stretch.
Well, we stretch. We're all about stretching.
Well, hey, Jonathan, thank you very much. Thanks. Reach out to you. We might sit down. This is for a podcast that I started a month or two ago.
Oh.
Based out of here in Prescott. Highlighting local artists and musicians and actors and anybody else that would sit down and talk with me.
Yeah, this organization, I have this organization that's all about everybody playing music. And there's going
to
be
cool, yeah. I'll reach out to you and shoot you my info. I can't. I'm blind as a bat. I'm a blind photographer, actually. So. Community? Did I get that even close?
Music, exactly. Music is the key to community.
Gotcha. Music is the key to community.
Yeah.
At www.commusikey.org.
Fantastic.
I'll put this up on the website, too.
Thanks for inviting me.
No, this is cool. Now, see, I'm like the laziest broadcaster there is. It's like, let's see who else that can talk so I don't have to do any work. So this works.
That's so great that you're portable like this.
Jonathan, thank you very much.
You go wherever you're needed.
I go wherever I go until they kick me out, and then I don't go there anymore.
That's great.
You want another one?
Eventually, yeah.
Let's see if they work their way around.
Yeah,
plug, what you're drinking. What is that?
Oh, I think that was a reserve for Four Peaks. Four Peaks is based out of Tempe near ASU and probably like one of the most amazing microbreweries.
Was that
not even
the
blonde
that you ordered?
I don't think he actually gave me the blonde. Yeah. I think he gave me the reserve, which was next to the blonde.
He was worried about the guy sitting next to you.
I know.
See, and that kind of goes to what we were talking about, the art form of music. The art form of microbreweries, how they mix. The gentleman that was sitting next to you did not appear to be a fan of the microbrewery. I think he was looking more for a Coors Light, and it didn't...
Yeah, you do have folks that come in here and ask for a Coors Light and some, you know, some popcorn chicken and stuff like that.
It's a little different place. Applebee's is down the highway.
Right, exactly.
But let's get back on track. We are talking about the Howling Coyote Tour, the very first one, 2005?
2005, yeah.
And so it's a big venture. Were you apprehensive at all about...
Oh, yeah.
What were some of the concerns that you had?
Nobody would show up to any of the shows.
And how was the first show?
It was good. I mean, the thing was, I was dealing, you know, that's why I dealt with the venues that I did, was because they already had kind of built-in crowds.
And the word of mouth, is that what you were relying on?
I was relying on the press releases and any promotion I did through radio. And I, you know, keep in mind, I'd been doing that with my band in LA for years. So I knew how to promote.
You were handling all the promotion?
Yeah, all the booking, all the promotion. And so, yeah, I had a good skill set going in. And for the guys here locally, you know, I paid for everything, basically, because I made sure that we got paid.
Now, how'd you find it? Was it strictly financed by the door when you were going?
Yeah, no,
did you have
booked
some sponsors?
I booked the shows. No, I booked the shows to, they were, They were shows that were, we were being paid as performers, as a concept. And I built the concept up. You know, when you talk to somebody, you have to come in with some color and you have to come in with some excitement and say, listen, we're bringing some local original singer-songwriters that are established in my neck of the woods in the Southwest to your area. None of your patrons have seen these folks.
This is all new blood
before.
Coming
this is all
in.
New, and this, is, but, this will be engaging and invigorating and exciting, and the show just goes on. You're not seeing one band and one artist. It's, you're seeing several different artists at one show. It's a great concept. You
and
know?
These are... This isn't... You know, it's not amateur night. These are guys who have developed their chops for years, cultivating what they were presenting.
Absolutely. And some of them, in my opinion, some of the best talent in my area that I could put together at one show. And the great thing about the tour is as it progresses, the artists get to know each other, and then they start to collaborate, and they start to play on each other's stuff.
And then you're coming with some pedigree with your time in the Bay Area, your success in Southern Cal. And now you're coordinating these artists locally and developing some new stuff of your own, it sounds like. You know,
yeah, and I was so inspired by it. And that was the key, you know, is that I had to be inspired by these people for them to be part of the tour. They had to be better than me, basically.
Now, it's developed into where you have some causes that you're touring for. Is that how it started as well, or?
Yeah, I always, being that I was an educator, I always wanted there to be some type of a nonprofit element to it.
Now, aren't all musicians nonprofit pretty much?
Is it? Yeah, we are. Yeah, because we don't profit ever. And to this day, the Helen Coyote Tour really hasn't profited much.
Okay, so what were some of the organizations that you were trying to help out?
Child Help, for the most part, which is based out of Arizona. It's a child abuse prevention nonprofit, private nonprofit.
Now, why that? Why did you attach yourself to that org?
Because I was a school teacher and I dealt with kids, and I've seen a lot, you know, dealing with both inner city youth and actually, you know, rural youth as well. It's kind of interesting how there's a connection between problems and problems. Yeah. You can't escape your
some
your,
of those
your
are just
problems.
Universal.
Yes.
It doesn't matter
absolutely
what your region looks
absolutely
like.
Absolutely, yeah. And so, you know, they can't defend themselves. They can't advocate for themselves. And so they need other people to advocate for them. It seemed kind of a universal theme to take on the road. And this year, actually, for our 10th anniversary, I'm going to invite each venue to choose their own nonprofit, and then we will try to support that during that show and try to maybe get some fundraising going during that show.
So then you're really hitting home to your audience. This is a local cause that you're there to help.
Right.
That's great, too, because it also links everything in. It's almost like a...
Right. And in fact, with each venue, I might even ask each venue to invite one of their local original singer-songwriters to perform with the Coyote Tour and then kind of marry their own scene with our scene.
Maybe have them come out here at some point, huh?
You never know. Yeah. I don't know why they would want to do that, but, you know. <he's> just,
Well, to play at the Raven,
of course. At the Raven, yeah.
Now, who are some of the names? You mentioned a few, but it's not the same group of artists that go year after year.
The original concept was to have almost a different crew every year. But every year, you know, let's be honest, you know, I mean, in a smaller area like ourselves, you don't find new talent all the time. I mean, you get folks that make a good living here and just stay here, and you see them in the circuit often. And so... it's an individual animal that I look for that qualifies to go on the Helen Coyote Tour.
Yeah.
So a lot of those same artists end up going for a year or two.
Who do you got coming up for the 10th anniversary?
10th anniversary, Kenny James is going to be back. This is only his second time going on the tour. He was part of the second tour, the 2006 tour.
He's a staple
tour
here in this region. He's
is, but he's... I talked to him recently. He's been working really hard on his original acoustic stuff now.
Nice.
And he was, in this space and time, he was really interested in doing this. And then he referred me to someone that he really respects and thinks that I will, a guy named Wes Williams, who I'm not familiar with, but I will be checking him out. I have a guy that's also been on several tours who I hosted the Prescott's Got Talent that was modeled after, you know, the national show. And that only lasted 1 year, and I was lucky enough to be able to host it. It was in our downtown square. Well over 1,000 people showed up, and people from all over Yavapai County and all over the state showed up to perform.
They were coming up from Phoenix area and Tucson.
And so one of the guys that came up was a guy named Ricky Hart, or Richie Hart, and he came up from actually Tombstone. And he had this great swing blues jazz thing going on. And so he's now lives in Pennsylvania, but he'll be flying out.
Oh, nice.
And then Jonathan Hust might come out as well again. In fact, the folks that won that competition for the Prescott's Got Talent was, they were a duo, a young duo, 18 and 19 years old, and they actually went on the road with me that
oh,
year.
Oh, nice,
yeah.
Nice.
So that was fun.
So you're in the planning stages now?
Yep.
This tour will hit the ground when? What's your target date?
We'll probably be performing in the Bay Area between July 17th, which is a Friday, to Sunday, July 25th.
So mid to the end of July?
Yep.
We were talking earlier about the website. There's going to be some upgrades and some new information on there soon. As he's looking at me, because I'm helping out with that. And my good friend Matt Hinshaw will be volunteering as I twist his arm to help me do that, and a couple other folks.
And I am humbly and gratefully
we'll kneel
before the great powers of technology that I don't have.
So what else do you want to get out there for folks to hear?
Just to support your local singer-songwriters, you know, especially that play original music, and try to ask for it, you know. And actually, The Raven is one of the few places here right now that really is playing a lot of original singer-songwriter stuff, as well as a lot of other venues in Prescott. I mean, I've been bashing on Prescott a lot, but let's be honest. It does really have a pretty neat little musical scene going on here. And you really can catch a lot of original music. Unfortunately, you know, I bet that you go into any city or town and you'd be hard-pressed to find original music these days, which is why I'm so passionate about that.
The Verde has a pretty interesting scene as well, the Cottonwood through Sedona, Camp Verde. There's some wineries. I don't know. What's the I'm going to try and get out there.
Well, there's the one in Chino Valley. They have live music there.
Yes, the Granite Creek. But out in the Verde, what's the main stage? Has a lot of not just musical artists, but visual artists as well. They've been out there for a year or so. Sean Morris, a friend of mine that I used to work with, is a photographer and has had some showings out there. Do you know P.K. Gregory?
No, I don't.
He does all original. He's a solo act. I sat with him a couple of weeks ago, and I forget what episode of the Mile High Show that he's got. But he's got an interesting story himself. He ended up in Norway as a kid and playing there, but he's got some very interesting storytelling music that's really fun to listen to.
Oh, cool.
He plays out in the Verde a lot through Cottonwood, Camp Verde, and actually here, Brick and Bones a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I've been so fortunate. I've been so fortunate. I mean, really, if you think about it, you know, we've got folks that have been performing here for years that are our own little treasures. Yeah. And I guess that's why I'm so into exposing them to new communities.
And where can we hear you? Where can folks listen to
you play?
You
don't really hear me.
No?
No, I don't really get out and perform anymore.
Are you hitting the open mic much?
A little bit here and now and then to try out some new music.
Yeah.
But it's kind of a once a year shot in the arm for me. And I consider myself a little bit more of a promoter these days than I do an artist, just because it does take so much investment to put out your own music these days.
I met you was, and I was surprised when I pulled those files up that are on that CD there. That was September of 2013. It's almost 2 years ago. I bumped into you at Don Cheek's open mic at the Birdcage. I was blown away that night at who was playing. We were talking about this earlier when we were at the bar. My job typically takes me out to events, covering them for local media and stuff. And so when I'm not working, I like my couch is my venue. That's where I like sitting, and especially with my little one at home. Now with doing this, the Mile High Show, I'm getting out a little more, and every time I go out somewhere, I'm blown away at the talent that is homegrown here in the Prescott area. I am just blown away. Don Cheek, who's playing later tonight here at the Raven, great musician.
Yeah.
That open mic though that he sponsors at the Birdcage, Becky Dahlke, I might be getting her name wrong, blew me away at some of the music she was playing.
Yeah.
Just outstanding artist. Yeah. And yourself. That was when I met you that night.
I ran an open mic here in town for a couple years, and I can tell you I some of the people that came through that open mic are some of the established names that you see now playing around town.
There is some great music in and around Prescott, and you're taking that and showcasing it in California, and it's a great thing. I'm going to reach out. We had talked earlier. I'm going to reach out to some of my my folks out there in the Bay Area and have them reach out to you to get some advanced stuff going on. Come on over. Come on. To get some publicity, and hopefully these knuckleheads that I know over there will drop in and hear some of this music when you're playing. So who just joined us as we're wrapping up here? We're done. We're getting done.
This is my fiance, Erin Johnson, who's also a big name here in Prescott in her own right.
Let's stick this over there. Do you perform as well?
I do.
Where can we hear you?
Usually some more classical music.
Yeah. Which is what? Yeah. I am the least cultured person you'll ever see. So.
Well, I play the bassoon.
The bassoon.
It's kind of like the classical bagpipes.
Yeah.
You know?
And where can folks hear you play?
Yeah, with the Prescott Pops and the Prescott Chamber Players and.
Then I probably have photographed you. Did you the? And I'm probably getting this all wrong, but we. Did the big children's concert at formerly Tim's, the Prescott Valley Event Center.
Music Memory.
Yes, I covered that a couple of years ago for the paper, and again, blown away at the quality of music, but new to me. I could hear something that was recorded 400 years ago, and to me it's new. It's great new music.
And it was to the kids. That's the great thing about it.
That's what was a blast, is watching these kids of all ages from local schools filling that arena, really getting into music that is so above me in my brain. But just, you know, classical music to me is what I learned watching Bugs Bunny cartoons. But that concert, you guys made it fun. It was enjoyable. It kept those kids really involved. And for a knucklehead like me to hear that and get a whole new appreciation for something that I didn't grow up with. That was not something that
That's fantastic. But good for kids and adults. Yeah.
So where do you guys perform? At the college? Is that
usually at the college, at Yavapai College. In fact, we just had the Music Memory concert last Tuesday. And another awesome crowd of third, fourth, and fifth graders.
Nice, nice. And has pretend Jim's not here listening. Okay. But this Howlin' Coyote thing, what's going on with that?
It's kind of secretive. I really don't know much.
That's when he disappears.
He goes into the other room
bit.
At night and just practices and makes these calls. Yeah, it should be good.
Well, Jim, anything else that you want to hit on, or
think
we got it?
Exhausted. Yeah. You sucked the life out of me.
I'm sick of sitting here staring at this guy, and that's what he's thinking. Like, get me out of here. Did you text her? Say, hurry up, get over here and get me out of here.
No, I wish I had that talent to do that, like, one-finger text or something.
Then he could have escaped.
This explains why he wasn't answering my text.
He could have escaped a while ago.
No, it's been,
we're good.
An hour now, I think. Yeah.
We're good. Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Matt. Yeah.
All right. And that's that wraps it up. Well, that was our chat. We hope you enjoyed it. Again, the Howlin' Coyote Tour. We'll have a link at milehighshow.com. Check out all of our past episodes and previews of upcoming at our website. We also have some preview clips on our YouTube channel, and most of our upcoming sessions, our upcoming conversations will be posted on our Facebook page. So check out the Mile High Show on Facebook. Again, there's a link right there on milehighshow.com. We encourage y'all to come out, and when we post where we'll be recording, join us. Sit back, get a little preview of an upcoming show, get a chance to talk one-on-one either before or after we turn on the recorder with the folks we sit down with. We've got some interesting people coming up, some great artists. We've got a lineup for a couple of more musicians here in town and some touring comedians. We are also in the works to head out of town and head down to Phoenix to sit down and record a couple of podcasts. And we're in the works for possibly heading back up to the Bay Area to cruise a couple of music and comedy venues there, and possibly down to Los Angeles and Hollywood. So we shall see. Don't forget, we can use your help. We can use your support. So head over to iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, wherever you download and listen to podcasts, and give us a rating, give us a review, give us a like on Facebook, give us some feedback through our contact page on our website, milehighshow.com. Let us know who you'd like to hear, what venues you'd like to hear us record at, and of course, come out and join us. And hey, one other thing, we got that little donate button. If you feel like helping us out and steering a couple of dollars our way so we can treat our guests and our audience to a beverage or two and maybe get some swag to hand out at the shows, we would appreciate it. Also, if you are a business owner or a promoter of any events in the area, in and around Arizona, get a hold of us that way too. We'd love to have you sponsor us. We've had some great communication and some support from the Palace Saloon in Prescott, Brick and Bones, Cork and Cuisine in Prescott Valley. The Raven has been very kind, and a few other folks, and some folks that kicked in, but wanted to keep it on the lowdown because I guess they want to make sure we're not going to embarrass everybody before they attach their name to our show. But we thank all those who have been supporters and those of you listening, and we encourage you to do so and spread the word. The Mile High Show at milehighshow.com, and we're gonna lead our way out here with some, as promised, some Chucky Wise. We hope you enjoy, and check him out as well. There's a one or two CDs out there you can get of Chuck. And until next week, we are out of here. Thanks for listening.
Well, I was a men's room attendant my last life at the Desert Inn Hotel. And I saw some hip cats buy your record over in Minneapolis. I knew you're doing well. Sinatra's men, they had me roughed out because I opened up my big mouth. Well, it wouldn't take very long to find out what I'm all about. I got a red Indian with a jet off key. It goes into overdrive. And my clothes, they're the serious 40s fabric. Make you feel alive. My uncle, he's the king of my sugarness. He's living down in Timbuktu. If you want to know what I'm talking about, turn the page. Extremely cool. Extremely cool.